Hey there, it's the Wine Sleuth, and welcome to my podcast. This episode is going to be all about Portuguese wines, as I was in Porto last week for the Essência do Vinho wine show, which is an annual show put on by the Portuguese wine magazine Essência do Vinho. I don't know if you're really familiar with Portuguese wines, other than port, and vintage port, which Portugal is justly famous for. But there are lots of other regions in Portugal as well. There's Vinho Verde, Alentejo, the Douro, Barreira. Just really, really lots and lots of interesting places that we never hear about, unless you take the time to actually find out about the wines of Portugal. Not only that, but there's also a lot of indigenous varieties as well that we're just beginning to find out about. And Portuguese wine producers are now actually focusing on these indigenous varieties and making some really good red and white wines. So I hope you enjoy the show. And today we've got Pedro Guedes, who is an assistant winemaker for Quantaterra, and they make sparkling wine in the Douro. We have Ana Rosas from Ramos Pinto, which is a traditional tawny port wine producer. And I have Carlos Campolargo from the aforementioned Barreira region, talking about the different varieties that they plant within that region, and also why he thinks it's probably one of the best places to produce table wines. So I hope you enjoy the show.
Alcohol, yeah, makes all the difference.
It makes all the difference. Okay. All right, so this is the Wine Sleuth, and I'm here in Portugal this week at Porto at Essência do Vinho, kind of wandering around and just meeting various winemakers. And I met this young winemaker, assistant winemaker, is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes, for Quantaterra, which is in the Douro Valley, is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yes, and it's a Pedro Guedes.
Yeah. Just perfect.
So I managed to drag Pedro away from the floor for just a few minutes to talk a bit about your wines. Yesterday we had the Quantaterra, was the Douro Red.
Yeah, it's a vintage 09, so it was a good vintage for us here in Douro Valley. And that wine, Quantaterra 09, Grand Reserve, it's 85% of Touriga National, which is a very fashionable variety in Portugal right now. And it has a lot of potential to grow, and I think we will, because we are learning to work with this new variety. It's not new, but it's new to the world. And 15% of Tinta Barroca. I'm sorry.
Right, that's okay. You've had a long day, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, long day and long night also.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you have, what, 3 more days, right?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about history, because I know that in the Douro Valley, historically, it's known for port wine.
Yeah.
And so you guys are, you don't make port wine.
We don't make port wine, no. So our, starting from the beginning, Douro Valley is a region, it's a very old region, it has more than 250 years old, but is new in white steel wine, in steel wine, mm-hmm. red or white. So people know us from port wine.
Yeah.
And it's funny, it's a kind of funny when we think that our company, which is the core business, is sparkling wine, started with port wine. Because one grower of Douro Valley, which was a manager of the Portuguese oil company, mm-hmm. Lived in Lisbon. And he was living in Lisbon, in a social event, he met the daughter of the engineer that came to the American engineer that came to Portugal for the maintenance of the bridge over the Tagus River.
Uh-huh.
So in that event, this is very interesting, and it's a true story. It's uh-huh. not common. And in that event, they fell in love with each other. So they are married. Mm-hmm. They are still married today. And they live in the United States, in Seattle, and mm-hmm. the rest of the year in Portugal. And this guy, João Rui Carvalho Maia, is completely in love with wine. He wants to learn more about winemaking and new world winemaking because he was married with an American woman.
Uh-huh.
So
wait, so he was American and she was...
No, he's Portuguese
uh-huh,
and she
okay.
is American.
Got it.
So he's living in Seattle and he gets in the airplane, goes to Napa Valley, and first winery that gave him a job Yeah. It was Schramsberg Vineyards, a very well-known house of sparkling wine in the States. And started work there. He was there unloading trucks, cleaning the floor, cleaning tanks, doing all kinds of,
he
of jobs.
He was like a cellar rat.
Yeah, exactly, a cellar rat. So when the owner of the company at the time, Mr. Jack Davis, went to pay him, he politely told him that he didn't want any money. He was there to learn about wine, about winemaking. And Mr. Jack Davis was astonished.
Yeah, I was about to say, he was probably very, very surprised.
Yeah, total surprise. So they became friends. And from that that friendship, Mr. Rui Carvalho Maia invited him to come to Portugal, to Mr. Jack Davis. So in the next year, Mr. Jack Davis, fly to Portugal, and he started visiting the regions of Portugal. And he was astonished with the potential of make wine in Portugal.
But to make sparkling wine or
it was sparkling wine because you know Douro Valley has a lot of different terroirs because of the orography of the region, and it's very different. For example, we are in the heart of the Douro Valley of port wine. In Pinhão, for instance.
Yeah, that's where very famous, earlier today I was talking to Dirk Nierpoort.
Yeah.
And that's like where their best plots of land are for wine.
Totally. Mm. And if you get in your car and you make the road to the top of the hill where we are in Alijó, you'll see a totally different climate, a totally different terroir. Mm-hmm. So, and this is amazing for a region to have this range of wines that you can produce. Top wines.
So not just port or not just vintage port, no. But sparkling.
But sparkling.
Which is really, I think, well, as far as I know, it's quite unusual, isn't it, for the
area? It is. And nobody believes us when we say we make high-end sparkling wine. Hmm. But when we give to the person the wine, people enjoy the wine and realize that we are a good company.
And so how do you make your sparkling wine? Is it method Champenoise?
Yeah, it's Champenoise method, but it's interesting. The know-how is American, is not French, despite this is Champenoise method, okay? Mm-hmm. So this, again, go back to the story. When Mr. Jack Davis came to Portugal, he was astonished again. And next year, the American team of winemakers were invited, if you're going to call it like this, to come and study Portugal. So
and when was this? What year was
in
this?
In the late '80s.
Ah, the late '80s. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they need one person from Portugal, someone that knows the regions, knows people, and that person is the current senior winemaker and manager of the company, Celso Pereira. Mm-hmm.
And he's Portuguese.
He's Portuguese, yeah. Well, actually, he's not Portuguese. He's from Angola.
From where?
Angola, in
Angola,
Africa.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
But his parents were Portuguese.
Ah, yes, okay. That
and
makes sense.
Yeah. And well, that was the guy that was chosen to work with the American team. So first things first, in which region are we going to do our project? Mm-hmm. So well, let's study. This is a very American way of putting things.
Yes, yes.
So
yes.
In Portugal, traditionally, Bairrada was the region where we're making sparkling wines in Portugal. Mm-hmm. So that was one region. Of course, the region of Vinhos Verdes, because of the acidity of the grapes, there was one region that was also studied. And of course, Douro Valley. So after a couple of trials, the region chosen was the top hills of Douro Valley, Alijó, the plateau.
But is that so it's relatively cooler, I'm guessing, at the very top of the hills as opposed to down by the river.
Exactly. Yeah, and another important factor, besides the temperature, is a major factor, it is the soil. Mm-hmm. Because in the top hills of Douro Valley, you don't have schist, you have granite.
Ah, I see.
So which is better to retain the acidity in the whites, which are in the white grapes, which are important for sparkling wine.
And so what varieties did you plant?
Well, that's also it's very interesting you put that question, because after we choose the location, we have to choose which varieties are we going to use.
Exactly.
Are we going to work with French varieties? Mm-hmm. Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, Chardonnay? Well, let's do something interesting. Let's study.
Again. Again, the Americans studying.
Another year, everybody was testing all the varieties we have, and if you want to call it a formula, despite there is no formulas in wine, we get to three main varieties, which are the backspine of our project. Uh-huh. It's Gouveio.
Gouveio. Which is a Portuguese.
White, Portuguese, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, in Spain, you can find this variety under the name Godello.
Ah, yes, Godello. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Malvasia, of course. Both white varieties. And a red variety, which is Torriga Franca.
Torriga Franca?
Yeah, used to make port wine.
Yeah,
red.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a red one.
Yeah. So, but the varieties grown under our conditions in the top of the hills with low temperature and the granitic soils makes all the difference in the wine you are going to have. So, after choosing the varieties, we start a program of mass selection with our growers. So we pick the best vines in the vineyard, and we start the propagation in our vineyards.
Uh-huh. So you planted?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So because we want, because all the clones are different, and we don't want different things
and
that
how many
we cannot
hectares,
control.
How many hectares
we don't
plant?
Own land.
Oh, you don't? Ah.
We work with same growers for 20 years now.
I see.
It's not because we are nice guys or we are pretty, it's because we pay them well.
Right, right. So and if they grow the grapes as you like them or as
exactly,
you want them.
Exactly. So we don't actually own land, but we go a lot to the vineyard. Mm-hmm. We see how is the evolution of the grapes. We make certain controls to see if everything is going well.
And where do you make the wine?
Well, that's another
question.
Very good question.
And this is proving to be very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So because of the American spirit and the project. In the beginning, in the late 80s, we didn't have a winery. So we were renting tanks.
Uh-huh.
So we have a deal with small wineries to make the wines. And the project starts like this and was growing and growing and growing.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of like renting a tank, basically.
Yeah. And the press, of course.
And the press is as well. Renting everything.
Yeah.
And do you still do that? Or?
No, not anymore.
All right.
In 1998, we buy our winery where we are now, which was a former apple storage warehouse.
Uh-huh.
It's not very beautiful from the architectonic point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Very amazing to make wine because of the cold capacity we have.
And you were saying it's an old apple?
Yeah, storage.
Storage?
Yeah, which is very nice to make wine because of the cool rooms it has.
Mm-hmm.
So we pick the grapes until only 10 o'clock in the morning in 20 kilogram cases, which 20 years ago it was a new thing in Douro Valley.
Uh-huh. And so everybody is doing it now.
Everybody's doing it now, yeah. Thank God.
For the better.
For the better. Yeah. And the grapes were going directly into a cool room to get a thermic shock, and we bring the temperature to 7 or 8 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And
when do you pick? Because, you know, in the Douro Valley, usually they wait, but, you know, quite a long time. But because you're making a sparkling wine.
Yeah, we pick early, of course. Mm-hmm. So we don't have holidays anymore.
Right.
So everybody here in Portugal likes to go to the beach and be a holiday with
in
family.
August, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, not for us.
Not for you guys.
No. We are having a lot of sun at that time, but it's in the vineyards.
Right.
It's not in the beach.
There's no sand around.
Yeah.
Right?
So
tell me about your wine. I mean, I had your wines and I really liked them. I thought they were very they're very fresh and good fruit and very well balanced. And they did have a certain mineral.
Yeah.
Quality,
yeah.
Which I found. I mean, is that kind of what you're
totally,
looking for?
Yeah, totally. I agree with you 100%. The freshness you have in our wines, it's in part due to the winemaking technology, which is New World winemaking.
Mm-hmm.
We work with inert gas, we protect the juice, we prevent oxidation, we go to details, try not to ruin the grapes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a process of not to ruin everything.
So your winemaking techniques are really from Schramsberg,
exactly,
more or less.
Yeah,
so, uh-huh.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we are evolving. We travel to Australia, me and Celso, to a top high-end winery in Australia, in fact, in Margaret River, which is Piero Vineyards, with Dr. Michael Peterkin, is one of the best Chardonnays in Australia.
Uh-huh.
And we are updating right. and trying to do new things and learn new things. But the basics of our métier, we keep it the same, of course.
Right. Interesting, interesting. And so are your wines available outside of Portugal?
Yeah, yeah. We sell our wine to Brazil, to Angola.
Angola, that is so interesting. Yeah, Angola. Have you been? Have you been to Angola?
Never been to Angola.
Not yet.
But Celso has, so, good enough.
There's hope. You might still make it over there.
yeah. Uh-huh. Well, we sell our wines, of course, in the States.
Mm-hmm. And how about the UK? Are you in the UK market?
No, we are trying to go to UK markets.
Uh-huh. And what do your wines retail for, your sparkling
wines?
Well,
X-Works, it's... The rosé, we can do a 4.5 euro. Uh-huh.
Right, so very reasonable prices.
It's very reasonable prices, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The cuvée is 5 euros, the millésime, 5.50, and the Gouveia, which is our top at this point, it's 6 euros. Right. So it's very cheap.
Yeah, so the market is really wide open. They just have to come to Portugal.
Yeah, people have to believe in us. Yeah, they have to talk with us, or else they won't believe in our wines.
Well, I have to say, I was a little bit skeptical when I saw Portuguese sparkling wine. I thought, well, I'd had some, but it was very surprising and very, really well made. I really enjoyed it. So well, hopefully we'll see you in the UK soon.
Yeah, I want to.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to visit you.
Yeah, please come. All right, Pedro. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat.
It was my pleasure to be here.
And hopefully we'll see you in the UK.
Yeah, I hope so.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, and that was Pedro Guedes from Quantaterra, sparkling wine producers in the Douro Valley. Would just like to point out that the prices that Pedro was quoting are ex-salar, which means that's before tax, VAT, and all that good stuff. And hopefully their wines will be available in the UK soon. I think they're very good quality and definitely very good price. Okay, so moving on from sparkling wine from the Douro, we're now going to the more traditional port wine, more specifically tawny port wine, which is one of my favorites, and I also find that many port wine makers prefer tawny as well, although vintage port is the most famous. I came across Ramos Pinto, and of course my eye was caught by their rather iconic Art Deco labels, which I just love. Anna Rosas, who's one of the winemakers for Ramos Pinto, was there, and we had a chat about her tawny and also about the new images and branding that they're going to be doing for Ramos Pinto in the UK. They're still going to be keeping the Art Deco, but they're getting a bit more modern as well. So here's Anna talking about her 20-year-old tawny.
Okay, it's the Wine Sleuth, and I'm here with Anna Rosas from Ramos Pinto. Is that how you pronounce it?
Exactly, very good accent.
All right, well, I've been practicing since I've been here in Portugal all 2 days. So, Ramos Pinto, it's a brand that's been around for a while.
For quite a while. We already won 130 years, so it was my great-grandfather and my great-uncle who started the firm, and they already work in port. And in the 90s, we sold it to Champagne with Rodreur. But we still work, so the family still works and runs the Ramos Pinto as we used to. So it's still a family house, even if we belong to a French house.
Oh, right. So you belong to the, I'm sorry, what was the name of it?
Rodreur.
Oh, Rodreur. All right. So you're owned by Rodreur, but the family still runs.
Still runs. Mm-hmm. So I'm the blender for ports, and when I can blender for ports, there's another girl for Douro wines, and Joël, my cousin, is in charge of everything, and the master winemaker.
All right,
the
senior winemaker. All right, okay. And so Ramos Pinto, so what are you doing in the UK? What is your, because I see you have some new labels, is that?
Some new labels. We release it in September, the end of September, so I think in the beginning of October they start arrive
in the
UK.
All right, so these new labels are available in the UK now? Or?
Yes, they are available in the UK. Mm-hmm. Maybe in some shops you still have the old labels, but you have very modern and chic at the same time, a different approach of the new labels.
So what is your approach? Because Ramos Pinto, you have these very sort of classical...
Exactly, and we want to have all those publicity we had in the beginning of the 19th century and have it in the labels. So at the same time, we have a RP, which is our mark for our barrels in all our wines.
I see. All right. Okay. So you have the letters RP on the new labels.
On the new labels, which exactly has they look in a barrel, in a port barrel.
Oh, right. So it's kind of like the brand, literally the brand that you have on the barrel.
By fire in the barrels.
All right. Okay. Fantastic. And what about the wines? Do you have any new wines? Or are they still?
We have, of course, we have our. We're going to release our vintage single quinta vintage Herve Moira 2009. So it was bottled in September and it's going to the market next month, in the beginning of March.
Uh-huh. So that will be available in the UK.
Yes, immediately, I think. And
Ramos Pinto. I mean, we did grab a glass of the 20-year-old Tani,
which is famous in Ramos Pinto.
Yes. Is that your? Would that be your most famous brand, or your most famous port? I should say.
Yes. Constantly, very good marks and everything. And for me, it's the best because it's really the wine I love to do. It's so. So amazing doing, working with all those wines. And 20 years, you have everything which a mature Tony should have, all the flavors, all the aromas. And in the 30 years, you have everything also, but it's more a degustation wine. And the 20 years, you have to be very careful because it's very easy drinking.
Right. So you can finish a bottle off in no
yes,
time.
Yes, and it's 20 degrees. So.
All right. So 20% alcohol.
Yes.
All right. So you have to be a little bit careful when you're drinking
exactly.
The 20-year-old Tani. And do you
very smooth, beautiful color. All Tonys have beautiful colors.
Yeah. Yes. Things. Obviously. Yeah.
We like jewelry, and yeah. We like old Tonys.
That's why I like Tani. And what food do you recommend then to have with your Tani?
In Portugal, normally you use it or alone at the end of the meal with cigars and with the very traditional Portuguese desserts, a lot of eggs and sugar and with cheese.
What is the name of it?
Doces de Ovos, docinho do céu.
There's a creamy dessert that you have.
It's like creme brulee.
It's like a custard. Yeah, maybe
yes,
it's like
creme
brulee.
Creme queimado.
No, there was another one.
There's so many. We had a lot of nuns, so we had a lot of different desserts. It's port and the Portuguese dessert is really good.
There's quite a variety.
Yes.
All right. So for your Ramos Pinto, you would recommend that we have it as with desserts then?
Or with desserts, with cheese. Not very strong. For strong sheets, you have the vintage and the LBVs. Mm-hmm. It's for more smooth sheets, more creamy.
Ah, creamier cheeses.
And all tropical fruits. Mm-hmm. We use it. It's typical in Portugal. It's melon and port.
Melon and port?
Yes,
ooh,
melon and port.
Lovely.
10 or 20 years. And then only port.
All right.
With
I think
nuts
I might go
and everything. Always a little bit chilled. Of course, it's winter. And if you are in a very frozen house, but normally a little bit chill, and it's really, really wonderful.
All right, well, fantastic. And so this port is the 20-year-old Tani is available now in the UK.
Yes.
All right, and do you know what it retails for, by any chance?
Well, I'm the winemaker. I'm not sure, but I think it's about 35 or something like that.
All right, excellent, great. Well, we'll definitely look forward to Ramos Pinto when I get back to London.
I'd love to.
Yes, thank you so much, Anna.
Thank you, Denise.
Lovely. Okay,
bye.
Great.
All right, and that was Ana Rosas from Ramos Pinto talking about their 20-year-old Tani food matching, as well as their new label that they have out in the UK. So be sure to have a look for it. It's still very iconic and still very eye-catching. Lovely, lovely labels. So next I've got Carlos Campolargo, who is a winemaker from Berreira. And I had a real difficulty saying that word, but Berreira is a wine-growing region in Portugal, known for its Baga But also lots of other varieties as well. And Carlos and his family have been there for a number of years, growing loads of different kinds of varieties and making many different kinds of wines. And Carlos took time to have a quick chat with me after lunch about what Campo Largo is doing, some of the blending and some of the blends that they're doing in Berreda, and why he thinks it's probably one of the best places in Portugal to be making table wine.
All right, well, it's the Wine Sleuth, and this week I'm here in Portugal, and I'm with Carlos Campo Largo, who is a Portuguese wine producer from Beirada, right? Did I say that correctly?
Beirada. How do you spell it? B-A-I-R-R-A-D-A. Beirada.
All right. Now, Beirada.
That's it.
Okay. Well, so Beirada is not as well known as, say, the Douro or Alentejo or the Douro. So can you tell me a bit about this region?
Well, the region is not far from the place we are. We are in Porto. So going south towards Lisbon, you'll make some 90 kilometers and you'll meet Beirada. It's in between these small ancient towns above Aveiro and Coimbra with the celebrated university. And there we are, not far from the sea. It's not really from the coast towards our vineyards. It's not really 20 kilometers, so it's very, very close.
Interesting. And so since you're so close to the sea, 20 kilometers, do you have much influence? Or tell me a bit about the region.
A lot of influence, because there is no really high mountains in between. Small hills that don't go over, they don't rise over 100 meters high. So the breeze is blowing all day, all year, and refreshing the climate. That is not so cold in winter, nor too much hot in summer. Okay. And the soil that we need to plant is mostly, I should say, it's a mixture of clay and limestone. Calcareous, really chalky sometimes soil.
Mm-hmm. All right. And is Beirada, is it known within Portugal as being a wine-producing region?
Yes, it's funny because it was known as a wine region before it was defined as one, DOC or DOP, as they say today in Europe, much before. Because this region was officially created in the end of the 20th century, but Beirada was considered one of the most important and largest wine regions of Portugal in early 19th century, late 18th century. So you see.
So historically, it's been known as
wine. Yes, the Romans were there. So wherever the Romans go, there's good water, there's some mining that you can do, and also good wines. That means a good place to grow vines and making wines.
And making good wine. Absolutely. So what do you grow?
Well, we have rather particularly because we have both local and non-local, so-called Portuguese grapes. And then we also grow some so-called international grapes or mm-hmm. French grapes, whatever. I don't pay much attention to that. So in all, it's 35 or 36 different grape varieties.
Wow, that we grow. You have 35 to 36?
Yes. And there's one explanation for part of it. Part is curiosity. Part is one commercial reason. Mm-hmm. For a while, after the death of my grandfather, my father was carrying the vineyards. He doesn't pay much attention to wine. He didn't drink wine even.
So, really?
So you can see. Uh-huh. And then he was selling. He, I must say that he did a very, very good job. You know,
putting the parcels together, mm-hmm. you know, selling some that were far away to relatives. And now we have two estates, and in all, we are dealing with some 170 hectares, which is in acres, kind of, you multiply for two something. Mm-hmm.
So it's
a lot, yes. Mm-hmm. So when during this period, my father was, he was the managing the whole business, and he was selling the grapes to another company. And this company was a lot in the international market and was very, very, had a good knowledge on what was on. Uh-huh. Do you remember when this soap opera called what was the name of it?
In America?
Dallas.
Dallas. Oh, Dallas. Yes, Dallas. Yeah.
There was the lady coming to the bar and said, "Give me a glass of Chardonnay."
Yes.
That's when the wine consumption was going down in the international market, but white wine consumption mm-hmm. was going up. Mm-hmm. So we experienced the need for what's on. What's trendy, mm-hmm. and we were planting according to the needs.
Uh-huh.
You see,
yes.
There was a
you were responding to market forces.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. and at the time when Portugal was not known and no one was thinking of Portugal wine, nothing.
Right.
And we were producing to this. So we got this. Now we don't even sell grapes to this company, but they are good friends. Mm-hmm. So, it's called Alianza, by the way.
All right. Just FYI.
And we are good friends, and we keep in touch. But we have this heritage of the so many different grapes. Most of them, we were the first to grow them in Portugal.
Oh, really?
Yes, oh, Merlot and Syrah and Petit Verdot.
Petit Verdot, wow.
Yes. So, along with this, I had my own intentions to come back to the wine production that we had interrupted for that while. Mm-hmm. And I was also experiencing some, different so-called Portuguese grapes from other regions.
Now, you were experimenting with these grapes.
Yes. So uh-huh. that's how we reach these so many different wine varieties.
Uh-huh.
I don't make a single varietal wine. Mm-hmm. Most of the wines we make are blends. Mm-hmm. So we shortened the amount of wines we could
right.
do, you know?
Yes.
You understand?
You don't do 36 different wines.
Yes. But not fun.
Close.
Close.
And you mentioned that you did some sort of, what sounded very interesting to me, a Pinot Noir Baga.
Yes. You experienced this sparkling that we make out of Pinot. And some people there are making it out, this sparkling out of Baga. But I consider Baga a very good wine variety for red, to make a red. The fact is that as I make as I grow the Pinot Noir, I can make the sparkling, I can make the red, and I also grow red, yes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, not sometimes, in some vintages, we blend Baga, the local grape, and Pinot.
Uh-huh. For your sparkling or for your still?
No, for my still.
Uh-huh, right.
Completely mature, mm-hmm. red, light red.
Wow, so that must be, I don't think I've tried this one. It must be very
interesting. No, you didn't. And there's a lot of people who really like the Pinot we make, and some consider it the only real Pinot made in Portugal.
Oh, really? All right. Well, I'm going to find a bottle.
But you must read about. Anyhow, what I think is that Baga, that everyone is speaking, when speaking about Bairrada, everyone is speaking about Baga.
So Baga is like the grape of...
I'm not so sure of that. Mm. Baga was grown in all central Portugal, in the Dão. Some say, and I think it's scientific, that it's older in Down than in Bairrada. Mm-hmm. But for me, what is very, very important is that we had blends. We were blending different grape varieties in Bairrada. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bayreuth is more than Bach. It used to be a lot of different grapes. Seven was the report of someone that made kind of exactly a report to the king about how's the cellars, how's the vineyards of Portugal in the middle of the 19th century, mm-hmm. 1867. That is published, it's a book, and there you can see that Baga is much more than, Bayreuth is much more than only Baga.
There were a lot and of other different varieties.
Mm-hmm. Bastardo, Castelão that you tasted mm-hmm. alone, everything. So that's now our main target in Bayreuth, recovering real old Bayreuth, uh-huh. which is also a blend.
Right.
My favorite wines in Portugal are the reds from Douro region. Mm-hmm. And there, they kept there the diversity.
Oh, there's your coffee.
And with this diversity, we could really make, they could really make beautiful wines.
Is that kind of your goal for Bayreuth then, to make
absolutely.
These beautiful?
To remake this blend, to create wines that can grow longer than only Baga alone.
Aha, uh-huh, all right.
And also Baga is a tricky,
variety.
Variety, because when it rains, and every year there must be rain
of
on
course.
The equinox, 15 September,
uh-huh.
and it goes rot many, many times. Uh-huh. So it's disappointing at those vintage. So we must make some balance mm-hmm. blending.
So the future of Bayreuth would be, you think, a blend? Or
for me, it is.
Definitely.
For everyone else,
Who knows? All right, great. Well, thank you so much, Carlos, for taking the time. Or did you want to say anything else?
No. Okay. Whatever you...
We'll do it one more time. So I'll just
your questions were very incisive.
So thank you very much, Carlos, for taking the time to talk about a bit about Bayreuth.
Bayreuth.
And hopefully we'll be seeing your wines in the UK soon.
Well, I'll go next Monday. I'll be flying to London to attend the grand tasting of Portuguese wines presented by Vini Portugal. Mm-hmm. I'll be there at Lord Cricket's ground.
Yes, of course. And so. And you also told me, though, that your wines are available at Portal Restaurant.
Portal Restaurant by the moment, because I don't have I don't have an importer at the moment. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking for one.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
All right, great. Thank you so much, Carlos.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Okay, and that'll do it for this edition of the Wine Sleuths podcast from Portugal. A big thanks to Essência do Vino for their fantastic wine show that they put on in Porto this past week, and also to Vini Portugal, who were one of the main sponsors of the show, and to the wine producers and winemakers who I spoke to, Pedro Guedes of Quanta Terra, Ana Rosas from Ramos Pinto, and Carlos Campo Largo from Campo Largo Estates. That's it for this week. If you have any questions, comments, etc., drop a line to Denise at thewinesleuth.co.uk. That's it for this week. The Wine Sleuth is Denise Medrano and based in London, UK.